great news, reviews, commentary, not just another podcast
on the Ordinary Pickleball Podcast.
What is the one joy in life?
To live by the Prime Directive.
Excuse me, I have a question. Does not the Prime Directive clearly state that you will not tamper with, affect the progress of, or force your beliefs on any cultures you come in contact with?
Aren't you precocious? Continue.
So, by telling these men to follow the Prime Directive, you are disobeying that same Prime Directive.
Well, How did you do that?
Jedi mind trick.
Now here comes your host, Kyle A. Barron of the World Team.
Welcome to the Big Ball Broadcast, episode 117, with all the geeky news you can use. We are part of thegeekmedia.com, gloriously embracing our nerdity. We stream live on StickCam just about every Friday night. Hello, chat room peeps. And all of our episodes can be found along with exclusive blogs over at thebigballbroadcast.com. From the West Coast, my name is Kyle Hebert. I'm an anime and video game voice actor.
And your co-host from the East Coast, Otherworld Steve. I am a musician.
And you're in a little band called Perimeter of the Void. Plug, plug.
Little thing, Perimeter of the Void. Plug, plug. Going to be featured in the soundtrack for Magnum Farce and currently being featured in the upcoming Machinima Project Soliloquy. It's a minor voice actor talent in there and some schlep hack writing it, I think.
I know, right? Yeah, I can't believe that. Yeah, speaking of hacks, behind the scenes, acting as our own version of Mr. Sulu, and he does a darn good George Takei impression to boot, is our own Mr. Mark Swent. Music that you're listening to right now on the post-produced version is by DJ Unicron. Check out his stuff at statesidehardcore.com. Coming up on our big show tonight, we're talking McGee is spilling little beans about Terminator 5. Brian Henson teases details on Fraggle Rock movie and a sequel to The Dark Crystal. District 9, you perhaps have seen the trailers, or maybe you're going to check it out in theaters this weekend. They're already forging ahead with a sequel. Could this be? Casting update on Robert Rodriguez's Machete. You may recall the little fake trailer from the Grindhouse movie. Do we really need another movie version of Dune? Really? Well, how about some downloadable content for Star Wars Force Unleashed? What caused that major Twitter outage recently? And what did you do during that whole day that you couldn't Twitter? Oh my gosh, it's like the whole society just came to a standstill. What is this thing called Spotify? And does it stand to change the music industry? And was Billy Mays a drug addict? That sounds intriguing. Why don't we just start with that one right now? Okay, let's just cut to the chase. What happened with Billy Mays?
Yeah, sad enough that we lost the greatest pitchman in the history of pitchmen. But apparently, this according to a Tampa, Florida report, TV pitchman Billy Mays used cocaine just days before his death, according to a report of the Hillsborough County Medical Examiner. The well-known infomercial salesman was found dead at his Tampa home in June, and Dr. Something Polish, who performed the autopsy, concluded that Mays died of heart disease, and in his report he states that cocaine use caused or contributed to the development of the heart disease and hereby contributed to his death. And the medical examiner concluded that Mays had used cocaine in the days prior to his death, but not immediately before. So, kids, if there's a lesson to be learned here, if you're a famous pitchman making millions of dollars a year, don't do cocaine.
Grimory in our chat room doesn't think it was cocaine. He thinks he was snorting OxyClean, which could very well be the case. Maybe there's cocaine in OxyClean.
I was reading an article the other day through Big. You were talking about products that you pay decent money for that you're getting totally ripped off on. And one of the top products was OxyClean. Is that it's a cleaning agent compound that's been around since, you know, turn of last century, and it's dirt cheap to buy, and all they did was slap a fancy name on it and some bright packaging and sold it for literally like a 1,200% increase. So thanks, Billy Mays.
And you know, I went through this whole lifetime, this whole existence, not knowing who the hell Billy Mays was. I thought he was like a blues musician when I said, "Yay, Billy Mays died." I don't know why I thought he was a musician. And then everyone goes, "Yeah, that infomercial guy." It's like, I've seen a lot of infomercials in my day, and I've never seen one single Billy Mays one.
I know you mentioned to me that last week you really YouTube some Billy Mays stuff. Did you? Because, I mean, I don't know how you can exist without knowing the wondrous Billy Mays.
Well, is he cooler than the ShamWow guy?
Last I heard, he didn't get busted for slapping around a prostitute and almost getting his tongue bitten off. But apparently now we're hearing that he was doing coke, so hey, you know, six of one, half dozen of the other.
And he's dead, so there you go.
But the ShamWow guy's just dead on the inside.
Just a bit. So there seems to be confusion in our live StickM chat room. People are going, what? Did they say that they're remaking Fraggle Rock? Oh, no, they're not remaking Fraggle Rock. Let's back up here. Okay, I found this article on LatinoReview.com, which, strangely enough, is always about movie stuff but never about Latinos. But anyway, let's go back to Jim Henson. He created the Muppets, right? And then he died, which was very sad. And then he left his company in the hands of his kids, Lisa and Brian Henson. So apparently the Jim Henson Company has been teasing the fans with some very sparse details about not a remake of Fraggle Rock, but a Fraggle Rock movie. And it's already been like a year or so of buzz surrounding a sequel to 1982's puppet fantasy flick, The Dark Crystal. That one, I'm really excited. I've heard that like Genndy Tartakovsky is attached to that one. But anyway, Brian Henson recently talked to MTV and said, now this is a lot of not a lot of info to go on, but he says Fraggle Rock is still in very active development, and it has a very strong script. It'll have a strong musical component. It'll be expanded to an older audience. When it was first presented on TV, it was pretty much for an exclusive children's audience. The feature film does expand it to be more accessible to a wider audience. Both of those projects are very close to going into pre-production. They're both really ready to go. The studio is just putting together the final finance pieces and the final distribution pieces. So there you go from Jim Henson Central there, Brian Henson. Now, I never got into Fraggle Rock. I never watched it. I think it was on, what, HBO back in the day? I just couldn't get into it. It's like, you know, The Muppet Show, I can't get enough of. That show is timeless to me. Fraggle Rock did not resonate with me at all.
I loved Fraggle Rock growing up with the dozers and the talking trash heap and everything. That show was the Fragizzle. And I don't know how I feel about these, again, coming back, revisioning, repurposing. I'm a little concerned with Fraggle Rock and Dark Crystal. Dark Crystal, at the time, was groundbreaking cinema. I mean, the puppetry in that movie was mind-blowing. It's something that still gives me nightmares to this day. Becca and I both, we picked up the anniversary edition on DVD, and Becca's like, I can't watch this before bed because that movie freaked the fuck out of me the first time I saw it. So, but again, it's one of those things where give us something new. If you want to do it in that vein or in that universe, that's great. Give me something new, because to bring that stuff back, it's so like Hollywood is out of ideas, and you're raping my childhood and going back to the trough again. And I'd just rather see something unique instead of a rehash.
I don't think even a movie based on that is gonna draw me in. You know, honestly, as much as I love The Muppets, I didn't see a lot of the movies because after the first Muppet movie, I didn't think they delivered. I mean, I caught glimpses of it on cable here and there, and it's like, you know what? This is kind of an empty shell of what the TV show was. And if they just continue that, even if they had a new Muppet show now, I'm worried that it just wouldn't be in the same spirit, you know?
Well, naturally, you know, with the loss of Jim Henson, you lost that talent there. I think there isn't enough money in the Muppet universe to get Frank Oz to keep coming back and reprising his role. So it's something that's past, you know. I understand why they want to do it, but you still got Sesame Street. Keep rocking the Sesame Street stuff. But the Muppets and Dark Crystal and Fraggle Rock, I don't know. I'm sounding old and crotchety here. You know, this current generation might totally embrace it. It might be, you know, their thing, and they'll be reminiscing about it when they're old and bitter like us. But again, I personally would just prefer that they wouldn't pursue that.
Now, on the flip-flop, I was a big, big fan of The Dark Crystal. I still am. Now, yeah, by today's standards, yeah, it's a little cheesy, but at the time, like you said, pretty groundbreaking. It's like you've never seen a serious Muppet movie before, and a really cool concept. And I would love to see more stories told in that world, so I would totally welcome the sequel, especially if, like, they bring Tartakovsky on board to, I don't know what they really want to do, but I mean, another Henson concept, another project that I was just in love with, and you guys have heard me talk about it before, is Farscape. Just a groundbreaking show that used to be on SIFI, I mean, sci-fi. they're Syfy now. That show just blew me away. The animatronic stuff, the puppetry going on there, that was great. I met Brian Henson at a Farscape convention here in Burbank back in 2001, and man, they need to bring more Farscape, which I hear they're going to do with like webisodes or something, which I think is the future of canceled TV shows. You know, we've talked about, you know, like, oh, let's bring back Firefly. Well, I don't know. It's a niche thing. Well, I don't know. Maybe you could test the waters with a webisode thing. Webisode, the whole internet thing is like the whole on-demand thing. It's like direct-to-video. It's the new incarnation of direct-to-video.
I think the only struggle with bringing things right to the internet is funding. The reason they're able to do things and make them look spectacular and have some top-notch talent is because you have advertisers paying for the commercial slots on the network or cable television. When it comes to the internet, I don't think you're seeing that matching revenue, so I think it's kind of an uphill struggle. To pedal back a little bit, one movie I would love to see remade using today's technology and maybe a slight little twist to it would be Labyrinth. And you'd have to bring Bowie back because it wouldn't be Labyrinth without Bowie, but I'd back that up 100%.
Well, yeah, and Jennifer Connelly is still active, so you bring her back. That was her first movie.
I'm all for a Labyrinth reboot.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Oh, Kat Yasha in our chat room says they did a manga series called Legends of the Dark Crystal, The Gartham Wars. I never even knew that. I had no idea. I'll have to check that out because I did really, really thoroughly enjoy The Dark Crystal and the designs by Brian Froud, which there are some gorgeous art collection books with all the designs from that movie and everything.
Alrighty, let's talk about Mick G doing his Mick G thing, talking about Terminator 5. So Mick G says, yeah, he's prepping for 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea every day, but he's concurrently prepping Terminator 5, another Terminator piece. Well, no shit, didn't give it away by the title. And IESB asked if he wanted to take some time off in between the Terminator films, and Mick G's response is, it's interesting. Obviously, Michael Bay had tremendous success following Transformers in a very short window. Some people like to take time off, but I'm excited about the next installation of the story and the Terminator idea. So for me, it's terribly exciting to get back out there and show a different face of that idea and perhaps get out of the apocalyptic world and into a contemporary world. I think the audience is going to be very excited about our way in. So very interesting there. Basically, what you're hearing here probably for the first time is that Mick G apparently is planning on fast-tracking another Terminator film.
Okay, so I saw Salvation. It was better than 3, but really, there's not much to it. I wanted to see the future war and see more about John Connor, and they totally made it about this Marcus character, which may be an okay story and everything if they got this whole trilogy idea planned out, but blah, 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 blah. Let's go back to the things that we've wanted to see and were only hinted at in the first two movies, the two best movies that Jim Cameron did, you know? And even James Cameron is not revisiting, so what does that tell you? I mean, McGee, okay, he made it look pretty. He can do action, but other than that, it was pretty much panned. Salvation did not really resonate with people, so as good an actor as Christian Bale is, the movie really was not a focus on John Connor. It was about Sam Worthington, who is going to be probably the big talk about because he's a big star in James Cameron's new movie, Avatar, is coming this Christmas, so who knows?
And you'd think, you know, especially with the success of The Dark Knight, that people would show up in droves to see Christian Bale doing his Christian Bale thing on the big screen again, and like you said, Kyle, it was just really universally panned. I wonder how much of that had to do with the rating. You take a franchise that's been notoriously rated R, and all of a sudden you have a PG-13 entry. I think a lot of people kind of caught the same vibe, like, well, you know, you're softening it quite a bit to hit that sweet spot in the theater, PG and PG-13. It doesn't get any sweeter than that. That's the widest branch of the audience you could reach. So it made a lot of sense. But, okay, you did that. You tried that experiment and it didn't work out too well. If you're going to go ahead and do a T5, go with a full-blown R because you've got your built-in audience already. This franchise has been around since the 80s. So you've got my ticket sale already if you go ahead and push for that hard R. Get a comment in the chat. I want my violence. Well, I'm with you, brother. I feel the same way. I want my violence. It has to be dark. It has to be gritty. It has to be it's apocalyptic. You know, that's what the Terminator is. You go around and kill people's. The PG thing, for as long as the franchise remains with that rating, they're going to go without my De Niro, too.
Yeah, Grimory in our chat says, is McGee going to slaughter Back to the Future next? Ferris Bueller's Day Off? And, okay, a moment of silence. Thanks to Rama for bringing this up. John Hughes, the great director, passed away. Let's go on a tangent here just for a second, even though it's not really something we want to talk about. It's not really geeky, but it is geeky, you know? Let's talk about Breakfast Club, 16 Candles, Weird Science. You know, those movies are classics for us 30-something, and now I'm 40, but you know what I'm saying. Our generation, Steve, damn it, and even some of today's generation have appreciated. And it's like, you know what? Comedy was funny before American Pie.
Well, I think it was a different type of comedy. And I think, you know, we've seen this big paradigm shift within our own culture where, I don't know, it's so ADD. And you know, the internet and our wireless technology probably has a big part to do with that. But it seems now, again, maybe I'm just really old and cynical, but it seems a lot of these comedies coming out, it's all like dick and fart jokes. And it's really not that funny. It's very juvenile. It's very school ground type humor. I think some of the stuff we grew up with, it was a lot more subtle. I think movies like The Breakfast Club in particular, what made that such an awesome film for its time is that it was so layered. You had a dramatic piece to it. You had a romance angle to it, and you had a lot of comedy in it. It was a roller coaster ride of a flick. And I don't think you see that nowadays, particularly with the type of comedies like American Pie. It's just like, dick joke, ha-ha, fart joke, ha-ha, dick joke, ha-ha, and you get that for 90 minutes. And not only has it been incredibly overplayed, but there's just no depth, there's no substance to it, and I just have a hard time taking those types of franchises serious.
Yeah, but back in the day, those films in the early 80s, I mean, that guy, I've seen it written online, it's like that guy really knew how to write teenagers. He really tapped in to the teenage mindset and everything that a high schooler was going through. And I identified with a lot of those characters that were created on those movies. It's like, I know someone just like Anthony Michael Hall. I know someone just like Bill Paxton in Weird Science. I mean, all sorts of stuff, you know?
Yeah, unfortunately, I think it's something that's behind us. But every time I think that, I also have to think, oh, you know, there's somebody in the Hollywood Hills pitching this aggressively to the top executives going, you know what we need to do? We need to remake 16 Candles, and we need to remake The Breakfast Club, and we need to really dumb it down for today's kids. And it's just a really, really scary thought.
Although, that you know what? There is a place for dick and fart jokes, and that, as evidenced by, we're being messaged by Mark. He's saying, oh, Kevin Smith ruined everything. You know, I got a soft spot for Kevin Smith, too, but he didn't die. We're talking about John Hughes.
I don't know. I like some of Kevin Smith's stuff. I do like Mallrats. I know Chasing Amy is supposed to be the pinnacle of his work. And, you know, I'll admit, I haven't seen it yet. It's just not a top priority of mine.
Zach and Miri Make a Porno. Excellent movie.
I saw that. That was a great flick. Three thumbs up, if you know what I'm saying.
Uh-huh. Yep. Where do you go from there?
So much for your moment of silence there, there.
I know, right? John Hughes, we're going to miss you. Totally. And Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Not a teenage movie, but another classic comedy. I think it was the last time that Steve Martin was funny.
Yeah, Steve Martin, way past his prime with the funny. This is kind of funny, I guess. Got an update on casting for the Robert Rodriguez film Machete. And get this, kids. Apparently, Lindsay Lohan and Steven Seagal are apparently back in the big screen game. And Variety says that they joined Jessica Alba, Don Johnson, Cheech Marin, and the previously rumored Robert De Niro and Michelle Rodriguez in Robert Rodriguez's vehicle Machete, the tale of a Mexican ex-federale double-crossed and framed for murder by a crooked American politician. And despite rumors to the contrary posted on the Bloody Disgusting website, Funny People star Jonah Hill apparently won't be in Machete. And I'm kind of having a hard time remembering when Lindsay Lohan, Steven Seagal, and Don Johnson were relevant. But casting news like that, the amalgamation of that cast there, it's certainly enough just to pique my interest. The curiosity factor for that's just getting me through the roof because, I mean, that's a really eclectic cast announcing.
It's majorly eclectic. And you know what? It sounds like spot-on casting, if you think about it, because Machete, again, started as a fake trailer in Robert Rodriguez and Quentin Tarantino's Grindhouse, a double feature with Planet Terror, which was Robert Rodriguez's horror homage. And then you had Death Proof, and a completely different take on like the whole road. I don't even know what you call it. I loved it though. But you had these fake trailers in there, and the very first thing that showed was Machete. It's like, oh, that's a movie I'd love to see. And then we've been hearing off and on ever since Grindhouse came out that Robert Rodriguez really wanted to make the full length version of that. And this has got me giddy. I'm excited. I think Robert Rodriguez is a talented guy. I mean, I'm looking forward to he's producing Predators, and he's going to be directing Sin City 2 down the pipe. But, you know, in the meantime, hell yeah, Machete, I can't wait.
And, you know, there's going to be some humorous irony behind all of it because, you know, let's admit the majority of the cast they announced, they're kind of washed up. So I'm not thinking they got the big bucks to secure the signature on the contract. Although I'm really surprised, you know, all those names and then Jessica Alba is like, holy shit, if there was ever a reason to go and see a film, you get to see this wide variety of washed up actors that haven't done anything in a long time. And then you get to stare at Jessica Alba for, you know, 90 minutes.
She's considerably better looking than Danny, what's his name, who plays Machete. Forgot his last name. But you know him when you see him. It's like, oh, that guy. He's in every Robert Rodriguez movie.
You know, that guy, there's always that guy.
You want to be that guy. It's like, you want to get a bunch of washed up has-been. I swear Robert Rodriguez and Quentin Tarantino must like share the same brain since they've worked together now, because you get some has-beens and then throw them up on the screen. You know, when was the last time that Kurt Russell was like a big box office draw, and then they gave him this great role in Death Proof? Yeah, Grindhouse totally tanked at the box office, but it has a cult following. I mean, Grindhouse cinema in itself is a cult sort of thing. So personally, I think it would make more sense for Machete to just to be direct to video or direct to download or something, because it is not going to be another Transformers 2, I'll tell you right now.
No, but I think there was enough of a cult following for Grindhouse where it might do decent theatrically, and like I said, I mean, let's be honest, it's not going to be a big budget production. It's Grindhouse after all, so they're probably looking at, you know, a few mil, probably 20 mil at the most, and that probably include covering the contracts for the actors as well. So, you know, I think opening weekend the movie has the potential to make back its budget and then some. As far as what you asked about Kurt Russell, I think the last time he was relevant to me was the first Escape from New York. So, yeah, it's been quite a while.
I say he was still relevant a few years later with Big Trouble in Little China. But after that, I don't know. It's nice seeing him in Sky High. But other than that, I thought he was great Death Proof, you know?
I get to give it up for Big Trouble in Little China. My apologies.
That one is finally on Blu-ray. I have to pick that up. But I think he did outstanding in Death Proof. A lot of people think, oh, it's too talky and boring and it's disjointed and all over the place. But if you want to talk performances, he owns that role. If you've never seen Death Proof, I recommend it just because I'm a Tarantino whore and I can't wait to see Inglourious Basterds.
Yeah, I love Tarantino too, and I love the cheese. Shit, I'm an Ed Wood fan, so, you know, that should say something. But haven't got around to it yet. Haven't got around to Grindhouse. Maybe I really do need that Netflix streaming on demand on my 360.
I'm thinking you do, man. I'm thinking you do. Speaking of other movies that...
Wait. I got to put this out there. This is important. This is more important than anything you have to say. No, I'm kidding. But speaking of the 360, the Arkham Asylum demo is officially out. I just had to put that out there. If you haven't yet, go download that thing. Probably one of the most badass superhero games coming out this year. So that's it. End of little plug there.
I need to download it because I want to see, more than anything, if they've improved it beyond the E3 demo that I got to get some hands-on time with. I'm hoping, you know, because games are always in development. Things are shifting around, and they take feedback to heart. So I'm anxious to try it out because that game, by the time this episode is uploaded on our site, it's probably going to be available. So, yeah, go get Arkham Asylum, guys. What can I say? All right. Well, anyway, back in more movie news here. Talking about movies that probably don't have the biggest budget in the world, but this one I think may make more of a splash than a Grindhouse-type flick. District 9, okay? By the time this episode is posted, it's in theaters. It's got a lot of buzz going to it. And it had overwhelming response like a month or two ago, like a few weeks ago when the director Neil Blomkamp first got the idea from the feedback based on it's like, oh, my God, everyone is just loving this from the Comic-Con screening. And it's like, oh, maybe I should think about a sequel. Yes, they're already talking about a sequel. And this this thing is about District 9 is concerning South Africa being a haven for refugees from outer space. And I know that sounds like it's a comedy or it's really weird or something, but you got to check out the trailers. Again, the buzz is like through the roof for this. Critics are gushing over this one. I can't wait to check it out. This originally came out because Peter Jackson is the producer on this, and he had tapped Neil Blomkamp to be the director for the live-action Halo. That apparently has fallen through, at least for now. So, in the meantime, they had this script. I don't have the writer's name, but they got this script across their desk. It's like, let's go ahead and throw this together and see what came out. So, District 9, I'm looking forward to checking out in the theater just because the buzz alone is like, wow, that looks really cool. It looks like another, you know, a thinking man kind of movie, not something you check your brain at the door, something that's like it's got a message, but it's not going to be hammer over your head and be annoying sort of thing.
The marketing so far has been pretty weird. I have to say, first and foremost, it certainly got my attention. But for anybody who's seen the trailers for District 9, it's done kind of quick cut news feed style. And it's stuff I think that was made particularly for the trailer, none of the silly things you're going to see on the screen. But that alone, just that way of captivating the audience with the trailer and kind of like a this could be happening in a city near you type scenario, I found it really interesting. And I don't know how campy it's going to be, because it certainly has the potential to be campy, but from what I've seen very limitedly, like I said, it has my attention. I don't know if it's something I'm going to rush out to the theater and see, but streaming or on DVD or Blu-ray later on, most definitely. Might wait to hear a little bit of the buzz come back first. But I have to say, yeah, just from the trailers alone, the trailer did its job. I've got a little interest for it.
Yeah, it's something that just came out of left field. The first trailer I saw for it, I think, was at Wolverine X-Men Origins, and it looked like this movie that is going to be like, oh, it's a political documentary about the injustice and people and struggle and all that. And that's the way it's totally tapped. And then it takes this left turn when you say, like, oh, this isn't about immigrants or people wronged in another country that's less a third world country or anything. It cuts to, like, you know, this alien creature and like, whoa, what the, and it's not played for laughs at all. It's like, this is like a dead serious movie actually, and it looks like incredible effects and everything, and apparently it was done on the cheap by Hollywood standards.
So slightly under $200 million then.
Slightly, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it, like you said, came out of left field, but since those trailers and the marketing blitz has hit, it's really picked up a lot of attention. People who weren't talking about it a month ago are certainly talking about it now. And I mean, that's the way it has to be nowadays to generate that buzz. I hope they one up on G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra, and actually allow the press to screen it and review it prior to its release, because I'll tell you right now, no interest to go see Rise of Cobra this weekend. Not when they don't allow the press to see it.
I got like an email from Fandango. It was like almost begging people to go see it. It's like, if you use this promo code, the cost of the ticket to see G.I. Joe is only $1.
And even for $1, Kyle said no.
Oh, what's the matter with me? I don't know. I mean, I'm reading reviews, not from critics, but just regular people who saw it early. And then they're saying it's a lot of fun. You know, saying, yeah, it's stupid, it's big, it's dumb, but it's a lot of fun. It's like, wow, that kind of sounds like Transformers to me.
I am not going to see this movie for one reason and one reason only. And I said it last podcast, and that's Crunchberry Commander. And I won't give anything away for anybody who's interested. You can Google it. You'll find plenty of references. But Crunchberry Commander is enough to make me want to stay home.
Does Snake Eyes have a mouth? Did they do that too?
Snake Eyes has a mouth. Snake Eyes, for those who don't know, the mute martial artist with G.I. Joe, has lips molded into his mask. It is incredibly disturbing.
Yeah, they did that to Optimus, and well, some people bought it anyway. I bought it. I don't care.
Oh, A-Bear, you're just a movie sucker.
I am a sucker. I'm a total sucker. Oh, my God. All right. Well, I have one more movie tidbit before we take a break and come back with our tech news and all sorts of fun stuff here. Let me talk about Dune. Okay. Anybody remember that god-awful David Lynch version from 1984? I think it's a camp classic. It's so hammy and so cheesy. and yet so beautiful to look at. It's one of those weird things. Frank Herbert's classic 1965 sci-fi novel, Dune. It's had many sequels and prequels in the book realm. Then it had, of course, it was like languishing in pre-production hell in the mid-70s. And then they had this 1984, this big cinematic turd come out. In the early 2000s, Sci-Fi Channel greenlit a miniseries based on Dune and its sequels, or at least two of the sequels. And in yet another Nobody Asked for This turn, director Peter Berg is developing yet another movie version of Dune, in which he feels he can offer a truly unique experience separate from those past incarnations. Lynch's film focused on part of the politics of the feuding houses of Frank Herbert's novel, who contend while trying to control the flow of melange, the spice that facilitates space travel, which is found only on the desert planet of Arrakis, a.k.a. Dune. And we all know interesting politics is in sci-fi movies. Anyway, Berg sees the story more as an epic adventure. He says, quote, "The book was more muscular and adventurous, more violent, and possibly even a little bit more fun. I think that there are elements of my experience of the book that could be brought in without offending the diehard fans of the Bene Gesserit and the Kwisatz Haderach. There's more dynamic film to be made." Now, as much fun as I had watching the original Dune, and I actually kind of liked the Sci-Fi Channel version as well, even though that wasn't played for laughs and wasn't campy or anything, I say, enough is enough, all right? Let's stop revisiting. Come on already.
Not a Dune fan. Saw the first one theatrically as a kid. Didn't necessarily enjoy it. Didn't watch the sci-fi reboot thing. Had no interest. Everything you just went on about for the last 3.5 minutes... couldn't faze me in the least.
Exactly. See? So me telling you, and I really enjoyed Dune on a pure camp level. Always have. And I'm it's like, so you've got two polar opposites at the end of the spectrum here telling Hollywood, no, we don't care about Dune. Move on. Thank you.
Well, you know what it is? It's exactly what I was saying about Robert Rodriguez doing Machete. It's a film they're going to put out. They'll probably spend $150 million on it with production and everything. If they make that money back, it seems Hollywood considers that a success nowadays. Nobody is really expecting box office numbers like Transformers 2 or Dark Knight. They're like, shit, if we put $150 in and it makes $200 million, by today's standards, that warrants a sequel. And in some cases, go ahead and greenlight the sequel before the originals even hit theatrically. It's just a very, very warped time in Hollywood right now.
I was just looking in the chat room. I have to quote you, Steve. My childhood cartoons are making my ass bleed.
It's like being sodomized by a cactus, you know?
This stuff has to be quoted on the blog or something, man.
Sodomized by a cactus with a Brillo pad on the end. Wrapped in barbed wire and broken glass.
Oh, my God. Oh, the pain. It hurts and I'm sitting down and now I want to stand. Anyway, we're going to take a little break right here on the podcast. And when we come back, we're going to talk about downloadable content for the Star Wars Force Unleashed game. We're going to talk about that recent Twitter outage, what caused it, and what people did without their precious Twitter, OMG, and whatever else we want to throw in there. You guys are also welcome to. You'll notice that we didn't touch on email. I just want to throw this out there. mail@thebigballbroadcast.com. Be entertaining, damn it. Anyway, all this exciting content coming up on the Big Ball Broadcast.
She's calm.
There are a couple of other things I'll just tell you when I remember.
He's crazy.
If you could not see the similarities in the personalities within like the first couple of episodes, you need brain surgery. I mean, seriously.
Can two people get together and record a podcast without driving each other crazy?
Slap.
Oh, you didn't have to hit me so hard.
It wasn't that hard.
Find out on Anime Jam Sessions with your hosts, DJ Ranma S and Kudo Usagi. Log on to djranmas.net/animejam or look up Anime Jam Sessions on iTunes.
Why, hello there. Do you sit in front of a microphone recording whatever may be on your mind, then post it onto the vast series of tubes called the internet? Then you, my friend, have a podcast. And like any podcast, you need to get it out there, really whore it up. But does your promo sound like this?
I implore you to listen to the Big Ball Broadcast.
It sucks.
Why misadvertise the quality of your podcast when we at Pro Podcast Promo have just what you need? P3 has a metric ton of voices and editing talent just waiting to work for you. Talent like these fine gentlemen right here.
Please, if you don't hire us, he beats us.
At least he feeds you. Please, you have to help us.
Now, boys, remember, if you don't behave, you don't get Kwanzaa. Then why don't you shimmy on down and send us an email to technical@thebigballbroadcast.com. You heard it here, Pro Podcast Promo, and all of its talent is waiting to hear from you.
Weebertainment Weekly, the greatest podcast you'll ever find, starring Tombstone and Zach Jenkins.
Sure, there are better ones out there, but not starring them.
This is Tombstone from Weebertainment Weekly, and this is the opportunity for me to shamelessly promote my program.
You mean our program, right?
Yes, Zach Jenkins, I mean our program. You are technically the host.
Since you've taken over being the spokesman for our program, why don't you tell them what we have?
On Weebertainment Weekly, you'll hear the best in entertainment and media news, as well as my favorite section, Talk Nerdy to Me, where I make fun of guys like Zach Jenkins, who wish their girlfriends look like anime characters.
Your mom. Join us every Tuesday night from 7 to 8 on WeberFM.org. Or you can join us on our podcast at WeberTainmentWeekly.blogspot.com or on iTunes under WeberTainment Weekly.
You've heard him on the Big Ball Broadcast. You've heard him on anime and video games. You've seen his video blog on YouTube. Now you can catch Kyle TV streaming live on Stickam. Join his webcam chat, ask questions about voice acting, have him do a voice or two, mingle in the chat room with other cool fans. Kyle TV is live streaming on Stickam. When? Well, whenever the hell he wants, usually on weeknights. Follow Kyle on Twitter at twitter.com/KyleHebert or friend him on Facebook and stay tuned to his status updates for the next exciting live streaming episode of Kyle TV on Stickam.com.
Yo, Steve Bloom here, and you're listening to the Big Bald Broadcast.
You sure are. Episode 117, all the geeky news you can use with Kyle Hebert and Otherworld Steve. And right now, we're going to talk about downloadable content for Star Wars The Force Unleashed.
Let's see, we get a report that a new downloadable level for The Force Unleashed, and that's for the PS3 and 360 kiddies, will take place on Tatooine in a scenario where the Secret Apprentice has killed Vader and has taken his place at the Emperor's side. Jabba's Palace, Boba Fett, and more familiar faces and places are said to be included. And on a similar note, the Force Unleashed Special Edition is to be released during the holidays, which will also feature a Hoth level where the Sith Apprentice attempts to wipe out the Rebellion. So if you're a Force Unleashed fan and haven't played it lately because it just got too downright boring for you, here you go. Plenty of new shit to wet your lightsaber's whistle.
Wet your willy with. So how much does this cost?
I don't know.
If it's like a whole new planet, then I'm thinking it's not going to be like 200 Microsoft points. It'll probably be like a lot more.
Probably a lot more, but probably cheaper than the Abysmal Watchmen download game.
Oh, yeah. And can you believe that for PS3, at least for PS3, they actually made a physical game copy of that Watchmen, The End Is Nigh. And this is a game I'm on, and I'm telling you it sucks.
I can't believe it. I mean, is it the same thing? Is it a port over on disc, or do they...
That's it. Yeah. Oh,
no, don't get it. I love the movie, which I know is shocking to about 90% of our listeners. Love the movie. Went and picked up the director's cut on Blu-ray. But to even call that a game is kind of a stretch of the imagination.
Tracy's asking, what are Microsoft points? That is the way you pay for things. I know it's silly. The way you pay for things on Xbox 360, you basically have a credit card on file or enter your credit card number on the Xbox Live interface, and you purchase points. And then once you have the points, then you can download content or purchase Xbox Live, videos, games, and so on.
And the funny thing with points is I think it's done to intentionally mislead or misrepresent, because you don't look at it in dollar figures anymore. You just kind of blindly spend your points. So you have no idea half the time if you're getting a good deal or not, because it's really hard to keep that table of calculations in your head when you're making these purchases.
Triforce in our chat says $20 equals 1,800 points. Like, okay. It's like, I don't know if that makes you feel like you're spending less money if you put it in points. Like, oh, it's only 1,800 points. Like, yeah, but that's like a lot of meals.
If you're Kyle and you don't know how to cook at home, that's breakfast, lunch, and supper for 3 days.
That's right, damn it. Or sushi once at a really nice restaurant. Oh, my. Oh, yes. All right. Well, in recent memory, that big social networking phenomenon known as Twitter went out. Oh, noes. What caused it? Well, in short, a distributed denial of service, DDoS. It's an attack. Attack! Yes, that's right. A DDoS attack, which is where computers have been compromised by viruses or other malware, and they're instructed by the attacker's computer to visit specific websites all at the same time, repeatedly. The barrage of connection requests overwhelms the target sites, making it so legitimate web traffic can't get through. Using a network of computers dubbed zombies, controlled by a single master machine, the hacker tries to overwhelm a website's servers. It's a brute force approach. The network of hacker-controlled computers floods the servers with requests for data until the server overloads and comes crashing down. So, a Russian blogger with accounts on Twitter, Facebook, LiveJournal, and Google's Blogger and YouTube was targeted in this DDoS attack that led to a site-wide outage at Twitter and problems at other sites. Chief Security Officer at Facebook, Max Kelly, explained that the blogger had a simultaneous attack across a number of properties targeting him to keep his voice from being heard. Such coordinated attacks require the efforts of tens of thousands of more of hijacked computers, which together form a botnet. Spammers send emails with malicious attachments or URLs to millions of peoples, yes, that's sent to millions of peoples to create botnets. Criminals can also lease existing botnets for specific campaigns for as little as 5 cents to 10 cents per bot. A Facebook representative dismissed a theory that the attack was triggered by a spam campaign in which emails had links to the sites. It's unlikely there would be enough recipients all clicking on the URLs at the same time to bring a site down, he said. There was a spam campaign that directed people to the Russian blogger's accounts, but it wasn't the cause of the DOS, he said. So there you go. Those crazy hackers, man. Isn't it kind of scary that, you know, your computer can get hijacked and turn into this quote-unquote zombie machine?
Well, I mean, no offense, Kyle, but it sounds to me like you learned something by reading that article. For some people, it's kind of common knowledge. But anyways, I found out by Facebook. Facebook was just down for a long time and refreshing and trying again on that tab in Firefox. Took a little while and finally came back up. And I went over to Dig, and headlines abound, you know, hackers taking out the Twitter and the Facebook. I think it was bound to happen. I think it took a while before somebody decided to take down Twitter for a little bit. Twitter is either your curse or your lifeline, and, you know, there's no gray area with Twitter. You either love Twitter to death or you hate the concept of it. And I could see where somebody could be, you know, a little spiteful or just bored out of the skull enough to take down such a large network. It, you know, certainly made headlines when you've got the capacity to do something like that. So we'll probably see more attacks on Twitter and Facebook as time goes on. And if you live vicariously through your social media, sucks to be you. If I want to post new Perimeter of the Void stuff and I can't because some hacker, you know, decided to gum up the system, sucks for me. So what can you do? You can't stop these things from happening. That's up to their security personnel and their IT people. So I guess it can suck for all of us from time to time.
I will admit that I did learn something from reading this article, because I didn't know what a DDoS attack was. And the reason I explained all that is because I know a lot of our listeners probably don't know what that is. So I just felt like I should explain that. The whole thing about leasing botnets, what's a botnet and all that. Yeah, that's weird. But it affecting Twitter actually didn't affect me, because by the time it was all resolved, I woke up. So I was asleep all day. I didn't miss anything. I didn't have any trouble logging into Facebook or Twitter. But if I were trying to, that would drive me nuts, because I am a Twitter Facebook whore. When I update on Twitter, it updates on Facebook automatically thanks to that Facebook app. But I love logging on there, and all I would see was tweets from everybody that I follow going, are you having trouble posting? Da-da-da-da. Twitter's down, I think. And everyone's just trying to get at it somehow by repeatedly refreshing this, that, and the other. But I don't know. I mean, to me, even though they're saying this, like, this was a targeted attack at some guy in Russia, I don't know. I'm just picturing a bunch of geeks sitting around in a room going, let's see what society does without their precious Twitter and Facebook for a day.
Well, now it doesn't have to be a bunch of geeks. It can be a 13-year-old bored on a summer vacation, dreading going back to school. Networks are relatively fragile, and usually it's the youth who find these exploits. And once you find that exploit, it doesn't take much to take it down. You know, same thing goes for Apple with the iPhone. There's just a huge security patch unleashed because you're talking about a multi-billion-dollar, you know, Forbes 500 company releasing the tech gadget of the year for its following, but it still has its vulnerabilities. And some kid at home tinkering around goes, holy shit, I can bring down the entire, you know, iPhone network with the stroke of my keyboard. You're always going to have it. You're always going to have that give and take struggle. It's the same thing with piracy. You can come up with all the media formats you want and all the DRM that you want. Somebody's going to find a way around it, and the hackers are always going to stay one step ahead. With all this technology in our hands, it is probably the greatest shortcoming because, as you said, Kyle, you need your Twitter. You need your Facebook. That is your kind of your link to your social network and vice versa. So what do you do when some kid decides, for shits and giggles or out of vengeance, I'm going to take the network down? It's that underbelly of that technological society. You know, furthermore, what do we do if two satellites collide in orbit and it just takes out the network for months because they got to put new satellites out or whatever? It's a very, very thin thread that's keeping us tethered to our technology. And you got to kind of keep that in mind. You got to keep that all in perspective.
And think about it on a grander level, not even just losing a social network. What about losing the internet? What about losing technology? You know, the whole concept of an electromagnetic pulse to where nothing will work. You know, we are literally devastated and brought back to the, you know, the beginning of mankind at the blink of an eye, you know, a nuclear explosion, whatnot, this, that, and the other, where suddenly nothing electrical works.
Today was the first time in maybe 2 months that I had cash in my pocket, actual tangible paper money, because it was required for the transaction I was making. But other than that, all my transactions on the day-to-day are a series of zeros and ones going through some computer network. And that's pretty scary because your money exists virtually. It's, you know, a blip on a screen at your bank. That's all it is. So when the networks go down, there go your finances. And to me, sometimes that just scares the shit out of me.
And if we did lose all the technology, now we're just going to scare the shit out of everyone. Let's lose technology, create chaos and martial law, and then suddenly money has no value anymore. And then it's just all like the L.A. riots, but on a global scale.
And again, it's quite possible. When I was in the military, and this was back in 91, the U.S. already had the capability to release a small missile into the upper orbit area. And all it essentially does is just releases a cascade of BBs around an orbit. Because once these things get up in orbit, they're traveling around the planet at, you know, hundreds of miles a second. And you can wipe out the entire satellite network around the planet in a couple of hours. And it's an incredibly realistic scenario. I mean, if you've seen some of those disaster movies where there's a giant asteroid heading towards the Earth, I mean, at least you got a couple days to kiss your ass goodbye before your impending doom. If our government or another government decided to launch a missile and take out the satellites, you'd be lucky if you had 30 minutes notice. And what do you do? How do you prepare for a bigger doomsday scenario, potentially, than an asteroid colliding with the planet? Because if you destroy technology, and that's your finances, that's everything that we survive on today's day-to-day, your cell phones, everything, somebody in the chat room says, you'll die. Well, yeah.
Yeah, little things.
Like you said, Kyle, it would revert our society to this escape from New York level of survival, this constant LA riot scenario on a global scale. And it would probably be one of the most frightening doomsday scenarios I could imagine, because hospital records would be wiped out. Everything, your wills, your mortgage, everything is just gone in a blink of an eye because we're so reliant on this digital technology. and there are a hell of a lot of hard copy backups. What do you do? How would you survive? How do you continue? It's like living in a zombie movie, Resident Evil. It's pretty damn scary. I don't want to talk about it anymore.
You just want to kill yourself, right? It's like, give me the gun. I'll just do it right now.
I mean, really, you know, you find out all the satellites are out, and everything's just crippled, and they're not going to get the networks up again, and again, you know, everything plunges this worldwide LA riot scenario. You kind of think, at least for a fraction of a second, do I just do it now? Do I just, you know, off myself and not go through what we're going to go through? Because, again, for me, it's an incredibly, incredibly scary, yet incredibly realistic scenario. Some hacker kid from North Korea, for shits and giggles, can say, hey, I don't care, I live in an oppressive dictatorship country anyway, so I'll just fuck up the whole world. And
yeah, Evil XM says in the chat room, we've survived without technology for hundreds of years before, we can do it again. But the thing was, initially, mankind didn't have technology, and now that we've had it, we've become so dependent on it. When you take it away, it's like a crack addict, man. You're quitting cold turkey, like, ah! And that's going to make a lot of people snap. Think about how many crazy people there are in this world where they're just barely below a boiling point, and it just takes something like that will just make them go over the edge.
When the stock market collapsed that triggered the Great Depression, you literally had stock traders jumping out of their office windows on Wall Street. There was, you know, mass suicide from stock traders because the economy tanked, and they felt a certain responsibility for that. Now, again, you're talking about a scenario that will happen globally, where you're wiping up the global financial network. There would be crazy panic. All the governments would instill martial law immediately to try to instill some sort of normalcy. And I'm really surprised that nobody's tapped that in Hollywood. We always talk about how they're out of good ideas and they keep coming up with these really preposterous scenarios. Address it. Address it head on. Give people some time to start thinking about it and kind of like planning their zombie plan. You know, it's like, what would you do? How could you survive when you can't create transactions for simple things like buying groceries and putting gas in your car? I think that would be a great apocalyptic film to make, and if anybody from Hollywood's listening, yeah, I'll do it for a 10% bonus.
It's probably not as visually interesting as the 2112, or 2112, that's the Rush album, 2012, the Roland Emmerich movie that looks like the day After Tomorrow or whatever, all over again.
Yeah.
But anyway, we got one more story here. I think this is pretty interesting here. I don't know if you've heard of, have you heard of Spotify before, Steve?
I have not, and I have just been waiting with heart palpitating anticipation for you to get to the story on the show.
I'm sure. Wow. Oscar clip, Steve. That's some good acting right there. I read this article on lifehacker.com. So imagine a music app with instant access to any song you wanted to hear. Imagine creating a playlist with those songs quickly and easily sharing it with your friends. It's a peer-to-peer music streaming service via a desktop application called Spotify. But its content all comes via the net and its users. Think of it as though the entire iTunes music store were actually just your library, and that instead of the poorly designed mess that it is, imagine that it was refreshingly streamlined, fast, and easy to search and use. And it's completely legal, by the way. Spotify is seeking out licensing deals with the music industry before going live, meaning it sits comfortably in the 100% legit territory. There is a free version, and there's a paid version. The free version streams at 160 kilobytes per second using the Ogg Vorbis Q5 codec, and ads are inserted into your playlist. Premium subscribers who drop $14 a month stream at a higher bit rate of 320 kilobytes. And other benefits. Here's the catch. Here's the big hairy but. Ah, yes. They hope to make it stateside before the end of the year, but right now Spotify is currently only available in Sweden, Norway, Finland, the UK, France, and Spain. Now, other cool things about Spotify. If you lose the internet connection, Spotify can store at least some of your tunes offline. Now, you can't store them on older MP3 players, but if you have the newer ones with 3G or Wi-Fi, then you should be good to go. They have submitted an app to the iTunes Store, but I highly doubt Apple is going to approve this, because this sort of concept would just totally blow iTunes out of the water. Meanwhile, they are looking to launch the desktop version for the U.S. once they get everything settled with all the record labels, so it will be a paid service. Again, Available only in those countries, Sweden, Norway, Finland, the UK, France, and Spain, for roughly $14 a month with no ads. Is that something that, like, sounds really, really awesome? It's kind of like the Zune thing, where you pay a monthly fee, unlimited downloads from the Zune marketplace, but it's all just streaming instantly. There's no downloading. There's no syncing.
Well, you know, as I mentioned in a previous podcast, I've become a really big fan of Hulu lately because I've run VGA out to my plasma TV, and I can just kick back and watch Hulu on my TV, and I find it to be a rather enjoyable experience, and I can deal with the ads because the ads are minimal compared to network TV. So if you're talking about a free streaming service, which also has a paid alternative for a higher quality stream, well, you know, as we've discussed before, we kind of live in the YouTube age where we've already accepted a degraded internet-based quality, and we seem to be getting by on that just fine. So I'd be game just for streaming it under the free section and dealing with the ads, because it really can't be, you know, incredibly ad-laden, and in the end, you still get to hear all kind of cool stuff for nothing. And again, I kind of throw a little dig your way, Kyle, because, yeah, I agree, you're never going to see the app come to the iPhone, but I guarantee when the service launches, I'll have it on my Android phone.
And then you could promptly rub it in my face. But, again, if they can do the desktop version and work it out with the thing with the record labels, blah, 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 hey, that's cool. You know, you're already getting this to a degree with services like Last.fm and Pandora, where they have a free version with ads, and then they have a paid version without ads. But the ability to, you know, play a song streaming instantly, no matter what, create the playlist and all that, it's a little more on demand. It's a little more iTunes-like, as if the music's already ripped to your hard drive, and you're not having to wait, you know?
And having it on the mobile apps, having it on your phone, having it on the newer generation MP3 players. When you have a service out there that's that encompassing, I can't see where it could fail. I'm sure the only reason it hasn't been brought to the States yet is because they're doing quite the dance to entice the record companies to look at the new model finally in a very serious light. And when you start talking numbers, I think the record labels are at a loss. They're really used to just, you know, choking the last drop of blood from the artist and keeping 90% of the take. And because the paradigm has shifted so much, that's not going to happen. So I'm sure the record execs are still demanding, you know, tens of millions of dollars. And this company's going, yeah, right. You know, you're probably talking 3 cents on the dollar you're asking for at most. So it's inevitable. And even if they don't get the support and the backing from the major labels, hey, maybe there's enough indie artists out there who will just say, hey, shit, do it. You know, let's make this thing rock anyway. Because, again, you know, as much as the record companies are feeling the paradigm shift, so are the consumers. The consumers are being turned on to all kind of independent music all over the world. You have the social networks like MySpace and Facebook, where you can just hit random page after random page and probably find enough cool shit to fill up your iPod or start filling up your hard drive, because there's a lot of really unnoticed hacks out there. So you could probably run a brand new streaming service, both paid and free, just with indie acts, throwing on the more mainstream defined label supported acts. To me, would just be bells and whistles.
Well, you know, you've seen the old school model of record labels being the hubs for distribution, and now all the record labels themselves have to become a conglomerate within a bigger hub, and that hub is basically iTunes, which is pretty much a monopoly now, it seems like. It's become the standard. And, you know, to keep the marketplace alive and interesting and all that, you got to throw a curveball so that Apple can't dominate everything. And yes, I'm a hardcore iPhone fan talking like that. I know that you don't distribute your band stuff through iTunes because you want to keep as much of the profit for your band as possible. And you want to set, you know, you want to set the price and whatnot. So if Spotify or Pandora or something else comes along, it can actually be a legitimate competitor to iTunes, you know, it's nothing but a good thing.
And I guess that's where a little bit of the concern lies with the independent artists, because the one thing that the record labels still have that you have to kind of tip your hat to them for is that they can get their artists out there. They can get them on these services, and it's become quite lucrative for them. The reason iTunes has worked so well for the labels is because they have so many artists that are under contract with them. You're talking about four major record labels in the United States. that essentially represent every popular artist you've ever seen or heard on MTV or your favorite commercial rock station. So with four labels, to me, it's kind of a monopoly as it is. But if they're making pennies per iTunes download, that still, you know, turns into tens of millions of dollars at the end of the fiscal year for the record labels. And it's hard for the indie artist to kind of get that same type of recognition to say, yeah, you know, we should be on Amazon and iTunes and whatever. There's a bunch of services out there that we'd be more than happy to make your tracks available on iTunes and Amazon and whatnot for a fee. And I really don't think it's fair to charge the guys who don't have any money to begin with to be parts of these services. Now, Weird Al Yankovic came out probably over a year ago. And the one funny thing about Apple and the iStore, the iTunes store, is that they've never publicly said how much money the artist or the label make per download. Weird Al kind of was the first to come out and break the silence. He said from his calculations, and you got to kind of take that for what it's worth, but from his calculations, artists get approximately 4 cents per 99 cent download. So to me, that's just embarrassing that the industry would shit where they eat, essentially. That's the way I look at it. So again, when you're talking about having social media sites and streaming companies, it really helps out with the little guy to a certain degree, because right now you still can't contend with the publicity power behind the record labels. What I do embrace for both signed artists and unsigned alike is going the video game route, going the rock band, Guitar Hero route. I think that's awesome. I think it's a great way for established bands like Metallica recently to really capitalize on a growing market and still being able to make money on your music. It's so hard to make money on your music nowadays, and I think, you know, people don't think about that aspect. Everybody has an entitlement to music. I can have it because it's there, and I can rip it, and I can download it. But that's like saying that you're entitled to walk into the Louvre and walk out with the Mona Lisa and say, I'm entitled to art. The artists need to get compensated some way, somehow. And when you walk into a deal like Rock Band and Guitar Hero, it's awesome. It's music to my ears, no pun intended. And that's why I'm so jazzed about the ability take some of our artist-created stuff and get it up on Rock Band. And I wish they had an option to do it for free, but I understand that because their technicians are the ones that are doing all the coding to make it ready for the game, they do want to make some revenue. So it starts at 50 cents and then goes up to $2 a song. And I'm very anxious. I'm on the waiting list. I can't wait for the news to come across my email that we'll go ahead and launch on that. I'm excited about it. I've already guaranteed in the podcast, and I'll reaffirm my guarantee now. Primer of the Void will be up on there, but we will be at the absolute cheapest price possible. For us, it's not necessarily about, you know, getting rich off it. It's about exposure, getting it out there. So, yeah, big shifts, a lot of things coming. This thing sounds really hot, and it's unfortunate. Again, not going to be on the iPhone for obvious reasons. I'll probably have it, but it's a step in the right direction with the labels understanding physical media is dead, commercial radio is kind of circling the drain. There, you have to embrace this new model to get the stuff out there. And again, I just wish it was a little more all-encompassing to kind of get the lion's share of music out there instead of just the top four. I think I rambled on long enough about that.
Well said. I concur. I agree. I'm shaking my head. Yes. Hurrah, hurrah, huzzah, huzzah. And we are fresh out of content, believe it or not, folks. That is another jam-packed episode, perhaps a little shorter than previous episodes. But hey, we want to go and do stuff tonight. So that's basically what it boils down to, right? We could have more stuff. But anyway, we want to thank our good engineer, Mark Swint, for pushing the buttons, keeping us alive. DJ Unicron for the tunes you hear at the beginning and end of each show. Check out statesidehardcore.com. Thanks to everyone in our StickCam chats that join us. For example, Axum White, BandGeek556, Dizze, EvilXM, IcePixie, JCS04, Kamina, Kat Yasha, Kiva Kesticles, Kurikara, Momo Hinamori, Nate the Great One, Otherworld, Steve, of course, R. Geller, Ranma, Russ7467, Sequoia, Tetsuya, Tracy, Triforce, all sorts of good stuff. Thank you guys for checking us out at thebigballbroadcast.com. Stay tuned for all the ending credits. Maria will tell you how to get in touch with the show. Until next time, this is Kyle Hebert.
And this is Otherworld Steve.
See ya!
Check out www.thebigballbroadcast.com, the central hub for all the geeky news that you can use. There you'll find links to our Facebook, Twitter, MySpace, and blog pages. Catch up on all our past episodes at blog.thebigballbroadcast.com. Send your MP3 comments and emails to mel@thebigballbroadcast.com. You can also subscribe for free via iTunes to have new episodes downloaded automatically. Donations graciously accepted and appreciated. Transmission complete.